Hello, angels, baddies, and bitches. Welcome back to my channel. I'm Amber Akilla. We're in the business of being hot and having fun, cute, chaotic, and critical thinking. This week's video is the first Friend Crush with Amber Akilla Baddie Book Club discussion session that we recorded. If you would like to join the book club, please join us on Patreon. I have never hosted or been in a book club before, so I'm going to be adjusting and hopefully improving the way that we engage with the material and the way that we conduct discussion sessions as we go. So if there are more people that want to join, I'm open to adjusting the timing of the next discussion session or adjusting the pacing of the readings. So yeah, I had so much fun today talking to everyone and getting their points of view. If you have your own thoughts and experiences, please share them in the comments. I think it's really interesting to get everyone's perspective. Everyone's at a different stage of their journey, and there's so much that we can learn from each other. So yeah, I hope you enjoy.
I feel like when I read this book, each time there's parts that trigger like a memory of me or like something that I notice in myself or something that I've experienced like with another person. Did you feel that at all?
Yeah, I definitely felt that. I was like, I like read some paragraphs and I'm like, yeah, that's how I acted when I first went to college, which is like not a very good thing. But I've like noticed it afterwards. And then this is just like, it like reiterates that like I was right.
Time is like a different perspective. So like, it'll be like, okay, wait, that's me. Or like, oh wait, that's that situation that I was like confused about or didn't really feel like I had clarity on. So just wondering if any of you felt that as well.
So I started reading it a month ago. Mm-hmm. So I got through part one, like maybe 3 weeks ago. So I kind of forgot about it. Okay. Like when I was reading it, I had like, wow, like I highlighted stuff. I made notes. I was like, I related to this, but I forgot. So I had to go back and reread it. But yeah, I relate to, yeah, this is either reminding me of myself or behavior that I've
adopted. I actually read this like probably like 10 plus years ago, and I'm just reading it now, and I feel like I'm looking at it with like totally different lens, because before, when I first read it, I was like super atheistic. Now I'm very like woo-woo spirit. I feel like it's like a super spiritual like topic, even though he like deals with it, like he talks about morality and facts, and which like sure, but now I'm seeing it through like, I don't know, I guess through my own like spiritual journey, like I'm seeing it reflected, even though he doesn't necessarily use those words. And it also definitely reminds me of that Women with the Running with the Wolves. Like, well, I feel like, yes, and I haven't even finished that one, but there's like a story, that one with the blue beard, where it's like the capacity to face what you don't want to see. And he, there's a part where he literally, I don't know where it is, but like, he's like,
we have it. Sorry, I'm so sorry.
This is no, I love it. Oh, you have a hardcover? Cool.
I know, and I thrifted it for $10. Anyways, I'm so sorry for
that. Amazing.
No, that was it. Like, I just thought it was, like, interesting.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Like, it's interesting that the books that I feel like have had the most impact for me are where there is this parallel. Like, basically, everyone's describing the same phenomena, just using, like, a different framework to observe it. And he does, like, talk about, I think, consciousness in and of itself is, like, a kind of spiritual or like esoteric concept that we've kind of been divorced from through like an overemphasis on logic and like empirical data. But I think you can find like a healthy balance between these two things. When I was reading the first section, I also noticed the more like spiritual discussions in the book that I maybe didn't think about that much when I first read it. Hi, Sophie. Welcome. We were first discussing, whenever I read like even sections of this book, I feel like it will trigger either like a memory that I have of myself or something that I notice in myself or things that I've noticed in other people or in previous experiences. I'm wondering if you felt the same way or like what your first impressions of the book have been so far.
Yeah, I feel probably very similarly. Like reading the first part was like, yeah, I could see certain things that he was writing about and go, oh, I'm thinking about this part of my life or these relationships and these moments. And I felt like I really connected a lot of the, I guess, the writing and the theory to maybe how I show up for myself or how I do or don't do certain things in my life and how that connects to self-esteem, which I thought was interesting.
Were people's like impressions of self-esteem maybe challenged from reading the book? I feel like my understanding of self-esteem before reading it was kind of like this vague, like, oh, you just have to like yourself, or you just need to feel confident. It's like either you have it or you don't have it. And it wasn't really framed as like something that you can sort of break down and actively work on. I'm wondering if anyone else has like had thoughts around that since.
Yeah, like the part where he's like, it's essential for survival, something about survival. Like, I thought that was really interesting because I don't think as a society we like prioritize it enough. There's a part where I think it's right here, the workplace, where he's talking about like people. I don't like that idea of like, oh, let's improve our employees' self-esteem so they can be more productive. But
I think like if you have a healthy self-esteem, it makes you more effective at work and your relationship to work will improve. So like, for example, I think at times when I wasn't really that aware of my self-esteem, I would attach so much importance to achieving things through work in order to have a sense of self. And then as I feel like I developed more awareness around it, I was like, okay, I can do my best at work and it's work. Like, it's not like a total reflection of my value. And like, how can I contribute like a healthy amount to my work and get the most out of it instead of like over-investing or not investing enough? Like, sometimes you find that maybe you're not trying as hard as you could be because you don't have a healthy relationship to your job. You think like, oh, it's not that deep, I don't really care that much. And then ultimately that will create like a long-term issue that you have to deal with later. Maybe you don't achieve as much as you wanted to because you were holding back in some way. So I think like the way that we understand work as well can also become jaded because there's so much focus on productivity and output and like working for somebody else. And it's like, how can you have a healthy relationship like with yourself and the work that you do and the people you work with or the people that you work for without it becoming like imbalanced in a way that's unhealthy or damaging or like not allowing you to like healthily nurture your self-esteem? Does that make sense? Yeah, I don't know how you feel like maybe your relationship with your education or like with your work has maybe changed over time, if anyone has any insights.
For me, I've had a really evolving relationship with my education specifically. I think growing up, I really liked to learn, but I think I probably had ADHD. I was really not focused. And then in middle school, I got sent to China to do like 3 years of middle school, and that really traumatized me. Like, it was just a very different pace of things and a different pace of motivation. And that like, and I like did well, but when I came back for high school, that really sent me in the opposite direction. It was like, as long as I have any motivation to do well, like I kind of even reject it. So it was like, and then after going into uni, I kept that mindset. Like, a lot of the times I probably would have benefited from learning the material better and even enjoyed learning the material, but I still had that really negative relationship to studying and what it means to motivate myself to study. And it wasn't until the past year where I was like, I don't think it's really the studying itself. And I think I'm like self-sabotaging in a way where it's like, I will benefit from this and I enjoy studying it. So I really had to like analyze my relationship with studying. And then I think since then a lot has changed and I've like developed better habits. I like a lot of the times like, oh, I just can't pay attention, or oh, I just can't do math. And it's like, well, is that really true? And then I kind of really sat down, and I think even just changing my relationship in this aspect made me realize like how quick I was to just define myself in other areas. And I think it's been quite interesting. Yeah.
I totally relate to the way that, like, I think when I was pre-high school, I didn't really care that much about school at all. And then suddenly I got good at school and then I became really competitive. I would like argue with the teacher, like, why did I get a 98 and not a 99? Like, blah, blah, blah. And then I got into like competitive law degree. And then it's like all the top students are all now competing with each other. You're no longer competing with like the full range of like cohort. And then I became really like demotivated by study because I also didn't enjoy like the material that I was learning at law school. So then I became like defiant in like not trying, or like, oh, I don't really care that much, I want to do other stuff. And then my relationship with learning like really fractured as a result of that. And it took me like a few years after university to allow myself to like read for enjoyment, because like I just made a video the other day where Because there's so many readings for law school and like very few people actually did all of them. But because I've put all this pressure on myself to do well, even though I wasn't applying myself, I was like, okay, I can't read like for enjoyment if I can't even finish reading for my university degree. And because my self-worth was so tied to achieving in external things like school, then it started to like erode my sense of self and my ability to like nurture the things that I actually enjoyed. So it's taken... It took a few years after university to be like, okay, you can just read because you want to. And like the things that you enjoy, it doesn't have to be something that's assigned to you. And nurturing like your natural curiosity, I think, is really important, even outside of formal education environments, especially because it's like good for your brain. Like I saw this, it was a tweet, but it was like when you get older, if you like default into the same kinds of habits, then your reality and like your brain capacity basically like shrinks because you're just doing the same thing over and over. So it's important to like experience novelty and to engage with things that make you curious and to make new connections and have new experiences, especially as you get older, because otherwise time feels like it passes so much faster because it's just like the same repetitive motion over and over again. But yeah, anybody else have any like journeys that they can think of when it comes to education or work or even like relationships and what you've maybe seen or reflected on since reading so far?
I guess like for me, like I've always been pretty good at school and I got into like a very good university. And then I graduated like a month ago and I feel like I've tied a lot of like, thank you. I've tied a lot of like my academic and like intellectual abilities to my academics and to grades. And so like, I feel like for the past like month and a half, I've been trying to like deal with that because like, I still wanna continue my education and like go to law school afterwards. But there's like still like 2 years until I would start. And so, I don't know. I feel like I've just been feeling like very intellectually like diminished, but I think after reading this, like I think just like reading this and like going through, like I'm like taking notes on it, studying it, I don't know, I like it. And yeah, I think just like being able to exercise my intellectual abilities without having to like get grades or like do exams,
mm-hmm.
I think is something that I'm working on right yeah. now.
I totally relate to that. Like, I think even when I was younger, I was really into like art and music, and my artwork was always graded and I would always try to get like the best grade and I would like win all the prizes. And then when I finished school, I was like, well, what's the point of like doing art if I'm not gonna like get an A plus, like. And then I just wasn't able to like exercise that creative desire, and it can take a really long time to like let yourself do things and not feel like you're waiting for some external validation for it, like just doing it because you enjoy it and allowing that feeling to feed into like your sense of self. And it actually nurtures your self-esteem as well. It's so much more powerful than waiting for someone to tell you whether it's good or not. And then some of the most like groundbreaking art is art that breaks rules as well, that isn't like conventionally considered like, I don't know, like a high grade or manages to like tick all these imaginary boxes that like academia insists on. And that's also the same for like any like scientific thought or like, you know, any area of study. Yeah, Paola, you had mm-hmm. something you wanted to say before?
Paola, yes. So basically going back to what you said about the work thing, I actually think it's like a healthy relationship to work to not be too like, because what I was a teacher and I'm an elementary school teacher for 11 years, and I just see like you're educated, and I feel like I relate so much to what you said, Karina, because I feel like it was, or the way it was sold to me, it's like, do good in school and then you'll do good in life kind of thing. But like, you do good in school and then you get out. I graduated after college and I was completely burnt out. Like, I got these offers to do like a master's and I was like, there's no fucking way. Like, I'm done. And then you get into, or for me, I got into work and it's like, wait, I hate this. Like, I actually hate this. And I just think there's a part here where it's like nobody actually teaches you to think, and as a teacher, like, schools are not teaching children to think. Like, they're literally just like teaching them facts. Now they all have iPads, and it's like they're just, it just, it's not, I don't know. I just think again, with the priorities, I don't think we prioritize the right things. I don't, like, self-esteem is not taught in school. For there's like values education sometimes, but like, it's, they kind of definitely put it to the side, and it's like, if you have time, and it's always like math and reading, as if like, because that's, those are the standardized tests, and like a lot of schools like depend on their funding on those tests, you know what I mean, like depending on their test results they get the funding. So it's like it becomes like this productive thing, just like work, and then when you get to work you're like, wait, I'm working for somebody else at the end of the day. So that's why going back to, it's like, if you have a 9-to-5, I think the healthiest thing is like, okay, this is my sustenance, but like, I'm gonna nurture myself on the side with all the things that actually make me happy. And then if you didn't spend any time figuring out what actually makes you happy, then that's a whole other fucking process. So yeah.
Yeah, that's a great observation. Sophie, did you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I was kind of thinking in relation to what we're talking about, like my journey with relationships and in social circles. I was kind of thinking about, like, I think even recently in my life, like there's been social and work kind of situations and people in my life where I've kind of put maybe a lot of value and emphasis on getting along with or having a positive relationship, or even maybe like having equal interests in each other with certain people, and then finding out when that's not the case, or they're kind of going, oh no, like this relationship or connection isn't as deep as I maybe initially thought, not taking that maybe on board as much or being as hurt by that. Because I think in moments where I've had low self-esteem or I haven't felt strong in myself, I've been really impacted by that negatively and really gone, oh, well then what's wrong with me? What am I doing wrong? As opposed to just going, well, you know, that's, we're not meant to be, or we're not compatible in that way. So I think that was kind of something that I kind of connected with in terms of that kind of those journeys with self-esteem. Yeah.
Yeah. I think he talks about like, how part of self-esteem is being able to adapt to change, which I think is something that you're not always like consciously taught how to do. Like, for example, in a schooling environment, it's just like everyone's at school, and then nobody really prepares you for like the huge change that comes with leaving high school and going into university. People can go in all different directions, and if you didn't really think that deeply about what you wanted to do, or you don't just have like a natural drive, because some people, I think, like they've in high school, they knew what they wanted to do and then they just went for it. And it seemed like they had a lot of certainty around it, but then the doubt or like the confusion and the challenges come later. And for other people, it's like, okay, you literally start thinking about what you're going to do and what does it mean straight out of high school. And you kind of lose, or you, it's difficult to like figure out how to adapt to change sometimes if you don't have like the right people around you that can notice that that's what you're struggling with. And I think that that's the same thing, like even with your relationships, sometimes it's not like, just because there's a slight like asymmetry between two people, it doesn't mean that, you know, you're fundamentally incompatible. And like, if you just like slightly read it incorrectly, it doesn't mean that it's necessarily a reflection of you or them. Sometimes it's just like, oh, okay, I can just like change the way that I see this person, because you're constantly being given new information. And like, when you don't understand the world in that way and you think, oh, it has to be the way that I naturally assumed it to be, or what I thought that it should be, and instead it's like, okay, it's actually like an ever evolving body of information, whether that's between me and myself or between me and another person. And it doesn't have to be like I have to come to a fixed conclusion and then like live according to this and adjust how I behave according to the expectation. It's like I can adjust my behavior according to how my knowledge evolves and develops, and being able to be like, oh, maybe I misread that, maybe they misread that, and we can like adjust from there. Because I think before I'd be like, okay, well, I assumed that it was like this, and because it's not like this, something's wrong, and like everything is wrong, and like I'm wrong and they're wrong. It's like, it's not that deep. Like, maybe I just didn't really think about it. Maybe there's like some other part of my life that's like going unaddressed and I'm projecting it into this relationship, or it might be true for them as well. And I think that's just something you have to live, laugh, love, learn. Yeah, does anyone else have any ideas or thoughts around that?
That reminded me of, I know this is about the 6 pillars of self-esteem, but actually before this, I just finished The Road Less Traveled by. Mm-hmm. We got influenced, and then it was, you were mentioning about like learning a new perspective to see a certain dynamic. Mm-hmm. And I remember a concept in The Road Less Traveled was something called bracketing.
Yes.
it was like the ability to still maintain like your sense of self and like who you are, but also to like withhold judgment or expectations of the future, or you know, like impressions of the past, to be able to incorporate new knowledge and new evidence into like a different paradigm of the world. And essentially that's how we grow spiritually and even just learn new information. Mm-hmm. And I saw a lot of like parallels between the six pillars and the world less traveled by. Like they're both their like emphasis on like spirituality and consciousness as a tool to, I don't know if it's a tool, but I don't know. This is not a well-formed thought, but it was just, I just saw a lot of parallels.
Yeah, yeah. Your thoughts don't have to be completely formed. Like just share as you feel like comes up for you. And I totally agree as well. I think the concept of like bracketing and ego bracketing is so important in being open to new information, and like the ways you might be wrong, the ways you might be right, the way someone else might be wrong or correct. I think that's such like a core part of the friendships and the relationships that I've had that have stood the test of time. It's like our ability to be like self-accepting and then open to the other person being different to us, but we have a core value that's like allowing ourselves to grow and allowing the other person to grow. We don't have to be the same, we don't have to do the same thing, we don't have to live in the same place, we don't have to believe the same things, but it's like a mutual respect and regard for each other's point of view. And I think like when I've had really difficult relationships or when relationships have started to break down, it's like there's an imbalance or an incompatibility between like our ability to do that for each other, whether it's like me being like, I'm okay with you feeling the way that you feel, but you don't seem okay with how you feel and also how I might feel. And these things are now in conflict and I don't know how to resolve that other than just like minimizing who I am and making it like pandering to your need, but that would make an inauthentic relationship. So it's like, I think that's something that people really struggle to do. Especially like the bracketing thing in online spaces, it's like people feel like they have to take all information in its entirety instead of being able to be like, okay, this resonates with me, but that doesn't resonate with me. This applies and maybe this, you know, I'm interpreting differently to how that person might be living their life. You know, like where we could be like in different parts of the world. There's no reason why we have to think about this particular thing in the exact same way. There's space for all different points of view, even if they are contradictory, because like being alive and the world in and of itself is a contradictory and hypocritical place, you know?
I haven't read that book. Is bracketing kind of like, you're like, it sounds to me like segmenting, but what is it necessarily, like exactly?
It's just like being able to suspend like your ego or your assumptions about a person, a situation, or like a piece of information, I guess. I don't know, Jessica, how do you describe it? I haven't read The Road Less Traveled in a while, but that's how I understand it.
I think it's like, I do think it's bracketing a period of time. For example, when you're in conversation with someone, it's really easy to not really be present, let yourself be available for an open conversation or for a learning opportunity if you don't bracket and you just kind of live on autopilot, which brings in your ego and brings in like past experiences. But okay, when you're in a situation where you want to connect with someone or when you want to learn something, it's important to learn how to bracket, where you still have your own like judgment and discernment, but it's like you get to suspend certain assumptions and egos so you can get the most out of the situation, or like I guess get the most of the situation and
like
learn,
connect with the person or with the information that you're being presented. Like to see it in a, like, I guess there's no like true objectivity, but it's like, okay, you notice. So for example, if I'm like talking to a man and then the man is like, you know, women are this and this and this and this. So bracketing for me would be like, okay, I'm just going to suspend like what I believe is true for me and for women in order to see what this man has to say. It doesn't mean that I'm just naturally, it doesn't mean I agree with him. It doesn't necessarily mean I have to disagree with him or even come to a conclusion. It's just like, you say whatever you want to say, I'm going to let you, instead of like automatically engaging in a conflict. And the same thing, something that men need to do as well. It's like, okay, you're talking to a woman, she's sharing an experience with you that might trigger your ego, might trigger like your own assumptions about you. He also can practice being like, okay, sometimes other people exist outside of my experience and it's different to what I'm experiencing, you know? So the ability to just be like, it doesn't have to be right or wrong. It doesn't have to be an attack on me or an attack on them. It's just like, I'm holding space for this information and this person. And I think like, you know, you need to have discernment around to what degree you are like willing or not willing to do that in certain situations. You know, obviously sometimes like doing it too much is going to become something that you're doing to the benefit of someone else at your detriment, and then other times, mm-hmm. you know. But yeah,
I was gonna say, like, it must be really frustrating to like hold that space for somebody and then to like realize they don't have that capacity for you, you know?
Yeah, so speaking doing it, finding like mutually respectful relationships is important. Like, I can do it for someone if I don't know them, but if you realize that it's not like a two-way street, then it's within your right to decide to withdraw from that situation, you know?
Yeah. And then listening to you guys talk about relationships, I think another thing is like the values. Like, I don't think most people are like, again, we're not taught to define our values. So if you don't know your values, you kind of just like take on either like your culture's values or your family's or whatever. And so you're just kind of like, and that's kind of like the core of your being, literally. So like, I feel like that's, again, the core of a lot of relationship issues. Like, you're not going to see eye to eye because a lot of people haven't taken the time, I guess. But again, if nobody teaches you.
So yeah. Yeah, I think that's also something that I've learned, like, in the process of creating the content that I create. Like, my core values are being able to be like financially independent, emotionally independent, like intellectually open, but also to have my own, to be open to the ways in which my point of view can change and evolve over time. And maybe when I was younger, I just assumed like, isn't that what everybody wants? And then over time, it's like, okay, not everybody wants that. And even some people who want it or think that they want it, they're not willing to put in the work to actually achieve it. And that's not my problem. Like, I can just share the things from my point of view for the things that have helped me. And it will resonate with the people who are also like on that same journey or on a similar journey or one that might intersect with mine. It doesn't have to be that, you know, people have to like agree or disagree with me. It's like the information is there. It's like the same thing as like the bracketing thing. It's like, okay, I'm putting the information there, and then some people will resonate with some of it or more of it or none of it. And it doesn't have to be like one of us is right or wrong or better than the other. It's just like, okay, this is the lane that I'm carving out for myself, and each person is carving out their own lane too. And where that may or may not intersect is just like, I don't know, a matter of fate and not something that you have to force.
And discernment.
Yeah.
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 For sure.
I'm trying to find... Yeah, so I think like the concept of worthiness is really important. Like, the conviction that our life and well-being are worth acting to support, protect and nurture, that we are good and worthwhile and deserving of the respect of others, and that our happiness and personal fulfillment are important enough to work for. So I think that that's like... It seems so simple when you read it, and then you realize like how difficult it can actually be in practice. And also there was like another point about how like a healthy self-esteem is about, you know, being like enjoying the process of being alive rather than being motivated by the joy rather than like fear to avoid. And I feel like that's where the philosophy of being hot and having fun comes from. It's like, how can you live your life in a way that is enjoyable for you, but also like intentional in the way that you pursue goals and the way that you grow and that you evolve, rather than being ugly and having a bad time, you know, just allowing yourself to like collapse under the weight of your anxiety or your fear or your desire to like avoid pain, you know? Like, at the end of the day, like, you're going to be challenged regardless. So what are you being challenged in service of? And hopefully it's like something that allows you to learn and grow and evolve as a person and also positively contribute to the world around you as well. Because I think that especially for like individualist culture, when you're dealing with like your education and working, it's all about how can you enrich yourself or how can you be validated by other people. And I think something that's always overlooked is like, but what contribution are you making in the meantime? Like, it's not just about ticking boxes at work or in your education and then getting a grade or getting a paycheck. It's like, there's so much more to the experience of being a person than just meeting like base capitalist or whatever societal requirements. And I think like when you live from a place of abundance or and joy, that naturally will resonate in your experiences and in your relationships and the way that you engage with the world, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I like that he touches, oh, sorry, what?
No, keep going.
That he touches on the fact this, like he calls it happiness anxiety. So like this, the courage to tolerate, which is hilarious, but also very real, happiness without self-sabotage. Because I think like, especially when we're in this constant, you know, depending on everybody's upbringing, like when you're on this constant state of stress, basically it's just allowing joy is a whole thing. It's like a, it doesn't feel natural. And then you have to, and then, yeah, the worthiness definitely goes into that, but it's just, it's so funny that we would need to like work on being happy. Like, what do you mean? But yeah.
Yeah, I think sometimes it's like you don't have a fear of failure. You have a fear of success. It's like, okay, well, if I let go of this anxiety, like for me when I was at university, I was like, if I let go of this anxiety that I've attached and associated with study, and like if I'm not anxious, it's like it was like this weird loop where I was like, okay, I was like so anxious and so stressed about doing well, I would be motivated by anxiety to study. And then if I get a good grade, it's like, so my anxiety was justified. So if I'm not anxious when I study, did I actually achieve anything? Is it possible to even achieve anything? And it's taken me like so long to get to a point when I realized, I was like, oh, I actually live in a constant state of anxiety. Like, it might look like I have resting bitch face or whatever, or I might still get the things done, but it's like, if I don't feel anxious and I achieve something, it's like, did I even achieve it? And then now I feel like I've developed a healthier, it's a work in progress, but it's like, okay, I can actually do things and enjoy the process and still do them well. If anything, I do it better because I'm not like doing it from a place of fear or anxiety. And there'll be times where I'm like doing something where, you know, 5 or 10 years ago, if I was doing it, I would be like stressed out the whole time. Like even just like packing my suitcase for a trip or something, I'd be like, oh my God, I have to pack my suitcase. And then, and I would like do it at the last minute. And then the last few trips I've taken, I've like had my suitcase out a few days before, slowly packing. And I'm like, oh, like you don't actually have to stress out about this. It's actually okay to just like do something and enjoy it and like allow the stress signals to come up in ways that are actually helpful and like protecting you from like danger versus like creating this illusion of danger at all times. It's like, it's just you and your stuff. Like it's actually not that deep. So yeah, like also the fear of success in terms of like, sometimes when you achieve things that you like alienate yourself from certain people or certain relationships, or you have to let go of things in order to move into the next chapter. And it can be, you can kind of like anticipate the loss of certain people or the loss of certain parts of yourself, knowing that if I achieve this thing, like I'm not going to be able to like maintain this relationship anymore, or like I'm moving into a different state of being that might not be compatible. And that can also like hold you back from like pursuing the things that you want to pursue, or recognizing that like, okay, it's going to come with so much more responsibility than I feel prepared to handle. So I'm going to like self-sabotage like subconsciously so that I can just stay with like what's familiar. But then time passes and you're like, but I'm not satisfied with what's familiar. And then you're like in this impasse. Yeah, that's just my thoughts and experience. No,
totally resonate. Yeah, because that stress becomes like safe. Like you're not comfortable, but you're comfortable in the safety.
Yes.
Because it's what you know. But like you also, you know, it's like a, yeah.
Yeah, I think also like dealing with like breakups and grief as well. Like there have been times where I've had like people that I know or friends that are going through a really hard time. One issue that has been dragged out over like years maybe, and it's like the event is no longer happening, but you have continued to allow it to affect you. And it's, I mean, now I don't really like intervene, but before, when I didn't know better, I would be like, you know, you do have to let go of the pain in order to move on. And they're like, well, who am I without the pain? You know, like if I don't identify with the pain, then I'm losing, like, you know, the memory of the person that I'm grieving, or like the relationship that I'm grieving. And it's like allowing yourself to change the way that you feel or the way that you see certain situations, I think is important too. The same, like going back to talking about being able to adapt to change, it's also being able to adapt to the ways that how you feel about parts of yourself or certain relationships or parts of your experience will change over time. I think is a really big part of like being able to, like, I don't really like the word healing anymore, but like being able to grow and evolve.
No, I totally agree, because I feel like the healing thing, or that's been my recent journey, like it becomes another, not rat race, but like another thing that you get stuck in, you know, like it's like it's never going to be done. You're always going to be healing. You might as well just like live your life and then just be healing at the same time, but not be like, I'm going to put everything on hold until I'm like, I reach this level of healing. It's like, it's not going to happen, darling. You just got to keep going.
Yeah. It's like more about integration, I think, like parts of yourself that maybe you weren't conscious of before that now you can integrate consciously and be like, okay, yeah, sometimes I'm insecure, but it doesn't mean I'm an insecure person, or I have to identify as an insecure person, or sometimes I experience anxiety, but I can also experience joy. So rather than thinking that it's just one or the other, or that you have to like repress parts of yourself, it's like the cute, the chaotic, and the critical parts can all coexist. And I think that maybe like with the flattening of how we see ourselves and each other through like online spaces and stuff, people feel like they have to limit like how they're perceived or how they perceive themselves. You know, I think it's normal to have a persona that people maybe only have a limited understanding of, but you need to still have practices that allow you to hold space for like the full extent of who you are. That doesn't always have to be shared with other people, but I think creating that space for yourself is really important. And yeah, I think someone mentioned in the Patreon, they did like an answer and they mentioned the healing. Oh no, someone else, Hannah. So the question in the worksheet was the cultural mirror. Brandon argues that self-esteem is our most pressing social need. Do you agree? Look at modern trends in wellness, success, and relationships. Where do you see a misguided search for self-esteem playing out? And then their answer is, I agree that self-esteem is one of the most pressing social needs right now. I see this play out in the health and wellness space to a concerning degree. And I believe that we are often being lured into a toxic trap / cycle of self-optimization. There's nothing wrong with self-improvement, but I think many wellness and longevity gurus have gone beyond this in a few ways. So number one, wellness is taking control of your health. And taking control of your health has become this weird transhumanism movement where many people are trying to manipulate the mechanics of life and use technology to live forever, trying to escape the only guarantee in life, which is death, is reflective of an inner anxiety and inability to enjoy the present moment, which to me means you lack both the self-assuredness / inner peace and excitement for the life that is present when you have high self-esteem. Even if you are not exposed to the biometrics and hyperbaric chamber side of wellness trends, there is still an underlying message of lack when it comes to constant cycles of self-optimization. We are often sold the idea that there is something wrong with us, and in order to fix yourself, you are constantly chasing one more meditation green juice trend in order to be healed. I think this speaks to the overarching theme of self-esteem or lack thereof. Entire industries are built on internalized self-loathing or at least insecurity, and this is especially true for women and all the bullshit marketing trends that get force-fed to us. I think it is incredibly important for every human, especially women, to recognize our inherent value so that we do not become victims to a system that literally feeds off our lack of self-esteem. Choosing to improve ourselves should be an autonomous decision made out of self-love and enjoyment, i.e. being hot and having fun, not a pressure cooker of perfection that we are constantly exploited by. Great comment by Hannah. Do you guys have any thoughts or reflections?
When I was hearing that, I was wondering about the difference between like self-optimization in a health way, like, you know, biometrics and like, oh, like anti-inflammatory, blah, 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 like more like body-wise, but also when you're seeking like spiritual growth, for example, like reading these books and trying to seek better ways to integrate with the world. Like sometimes I can see I have perfectionism, like with the more spirituality side too. And I'm struggling to see how that could be an issue when, I'm not saying perfectionism leads me to do better, but it's like, like, I definitely have to fixate on something a little bit for me to get it done. So I was just wondering what the difference was between like your body and your mind. And I guess like, now that I said it out loud, I guess like one motivator is fear and anxiety, but I was just wondering what you guys thought. Yeah.
Well, when you were reading the comments, something that's, it's like, I think this wellness thing or this wellness, well, it's an industry at this point. Like, I think it just, it's the way I see it, it's like, it's turned into like a, another leg of capitalism where it's focused on consumption. So it's like, they want to, I don't think there's any self-esteem there, because when you, or they, that's, they want the opposite, because when you have a strong self-esteem, you don't need to be told what to do. Like, you kind of like have this trust in your own innate knowing, I want to say, I don't know. And I think what the industry, these industries want is for you to be dependent on them. And so they want insecure people, you know, that they're easier to sell to.
I think that, like, the way that I think about how I would engage with, like, the health and wellness industry, or even with the way that I want to, like, learn and evolve in, like, a spiritual or, like, mental way as well. Things exist on a spectrum. It's, like, there's things that are win-win. So it's, like, I'm engaging with this information. I learn something new. I can integrate it into my life in a way that is uncomfortable enough that it allows me to grow, but not so uncomfortable that it becomes, like, overwhelming. And then there's things that it's, like, okay, I am investing into this in a way that is actually becoming detrimental to me. So now I'm being driven by fear and anxiety rather than a desire and openness to learn and evolve, versus I'm being driven by the excitement or the joy of being able to learn more about myself or being able to live a healthier lifestyle. And I think that when you're like, it's not that you have to completely reject any information that comes from this industry, because I think there are still like valuable things that come from it. But I think now we're at a stage where like the basics still ring true. Like now they're just like creating problems and creating solutions for those problems in order to sell things. At the end of the day, like pillars of health are like stress management, getting enough sleep, balanced diet, physical activity. That's it. Okay. And then people can exploit those things in all different ways and package different ways for you to do them. If you spending money on like a really expensive Pilates class makes sense for you financially and you enjoy it, then by all means do it. But if you're doing it because you have a fear of like gaining weight and you're like have a negative relationship with your body, then maybe it's not working in your favor. So I think rather than thinking about things in terms of like this or that is bad, it's like, what is my relationship to the thing? And is it nurturing a healthy sense of self and me being hot and having fun? Or am I being driven by a fear of being ugly and having a bad time, or a fear of not being enough, you know? So when I was younger, like I've been really curious and like interested in the wellness movement and in like spirituality and stuff from a really young age. So I've seen high fat diet, high protein diet, high carb diet. Like I've seen all of them. And I used to treat my body like a science experiment almost, because I was so, I hated university so much. I was like vegan. I was this, I was that. And then I realized, yes, I was interested in it, but then I'd also internalize like toxic messaging around how you should look or like being skinny or whatever. And then when I just relinquished, let go and was like, it's not that hard actually, or like it doesn't have to be so hard. And when I actually just enjoy eating and like the privilege of being able to choose what I get to eat, and the, and I do physical activity that I find enjoyable, it's so much more sustainable than the best, most effective way to exercise is whatever the current trend is, you know? But it's like, okay, well, what do I actually enjoy? Because that's what's going to be the most sustainable. So I think it's like your relationship to the thing that matters more than the thing itself. Whatever works for you, if you enjoy CrossFit and you can do it regularly, do CrossFit. If you enjoy pole dance and you can do it regularly, do pole dance. But don't force yourself to do CrossFit if you don't enjoy it, because you think that you'll be rewarded at some later date for doing it. You know what I mean?
Well, I just, it makes me think of what you were saying, Jessica, about like the difference between mind and body, because I used to confuse them too. Like I used to think they were like, well, if my mind is in my body, how are they not the same thing? Or that's the way I saw it. But for me, like I'm very much in my head and I need to like bring myself down to the body. So like, I guess the way that I refer to the body work is like more like somatic. So like EFT tapping and like stuff like that. I don't know if that, like that's been super helpful for me, but I think there's like, or you mentioned ADHD, I feel like for some brains, like there's this like desire to understand, like for me, like I just want to understand. And I feel like once I understand, like, I don't know, like I'm gonna crack the code or something, but like there's things that can't be understood up here. Like you have to like actually feel them and process them and like cry them out and, you know, the stuff.
Yeah, I think when I was younger, I felt like everything could just be figured out in my head. Mm-hmm. If I just like read enough or if I watch enough, then I'll be perfect or then I'll, you know, be enlightened. And then I realized that, you know, it's about being present as well in your experience and observing how you feel, observing what you're thinking, and then allowing space to just see how things happen, you know, like, or see how different dots will connect at a later date. Like now when I'm like working on something, I'll read like a question or read like a prompt, and then I'll just go and live my life and then allow like my subconscious to, you know, make observations about the world and like connect dots rather than forcing myself to sit and figure everything out. I think part of life is like experiencing life too. It's not just about analyzing life. It's not just about figuring out how to optimize life. You can still do that, but at least in like a healthy ratio to being present in your relationships too. Like when I was younger, I was like so obsessed with doing well in school that I would make it like my whole personality. Like, no, I have to study. Like, I'm sorry, I can't be here. I have to study. And it's like, in order for me to study well, I also have to enjoy social time and like, you know, going outside and walking and like connecting with people too. And obviously that ratio will shift, you know, day to day or week to week, but just being aware of how you're adjusting, I think, is the most important part, if that makes sense.
That made me think of like, speaking of like not knowing, we're not taught how to think or how to learn. There's a course in Coursera I took like so many years ago that's like learning how to learn, and that was exactly one of the tips. Like, whatever you're studying, like take a walk, like don't, because like again, if you're like seeking the knowledge or the understanding, you're gonna burn yourself out mentally. But like it is so much more helpful and it works so much better if you like you said, like take a prompt, take a walk, like literally take a walk, and then your brain is gonna be connecting those things without you needing to do anything.
Yeah,
most of the time.
Yeah, give yourself like space to process. And I think that's the same with relationships as well. Like, you don't have to have an answer right away, and being able to even just communicate, it's like, I'm not really sure, like I don't know yet, like give me a minute, or and giving other people a minute too, you know. I think that's a really important thing as well, because so much of our expectations for time have been warped because of technology. But like, the human body is still the human body. The human brain hasn't really evolved in like the last 10,000 years. So being like, okay, I'm actually just like flesh and like a conduit for like consciousness, then you can have more self-compassion and more patience with yourself and with other people. It doesn't have to be like, why didn't they message me back straight away? Like, I need to come up with an answer straight away. It's like actually not life and death, like second to second, you know?
You guys were talking about how, you know, we're actually scared to be happy, and it's like it's about getting out of the anxiety loop. I guess since I am younger, I don't see what the other side of it is, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess retrospectively you can say, oh, then I was in a state of anxiety, but now because I do it from a state of calmness, you can now recognize it was a state of an anxiety. But I don't think I've lived long enough to even, I haven't gotten there yet. So do you guys have like tips or strategies on how to increase your capacity to feel more safe?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
I think for me, like when I talk about like hot girl habits, like meditation and journaling and having like a non-negotiable hobby, those, when I learned to prioritize those things in my life first, and then to add on the work or the study or the responsibility, rather than having the focusing on the responsibility, the external responsibility first, and then trying to fit in time for myself, like focusing on having practices that allow me to ground myself, has been really helpful. Like only through consistent practice of that was I like, oh, okay, I don't actually have to be so stressed at work. Because if I just focus or put too much emphasis on the study or on the work and wait for an opportunity to fit myself in, like it's almost never ending. Like there's always going to be another demand, there's always going to be another job, another assignment. So it's not that you have to do away with your responsibilities. It's just like readjusting your perspective. So it's like, okay, I need to make sure that I'm feeling centered and grounded, and that I'm at least tending to myself And then I can show up better to the external responsibilities. So it's not necessarily like an overnight switch that occurs, but like a very gradual shift, I think. And you're not taught to prioritize yourself, especially as a woman. It's always about like, how can I get all these other things done? And then I'll give myself the opportunity. But it's actually so much more sustainable, and like your life is so much more abundant when you focus on just meeting your own needs. And it's not like, okay, nobody speak to me and like I have to focus on myself. It's like, it could be 20 minutes to an hour a day where you're just like, me time, no time. Like I don't wake up and like scroll on my phone. I wake up, I do a meditation, have a tea, then I can turn my phone on. That's like 20 minutes that at least I'm allowing myself time with me, you know? And then a few times a week, if I go to like the pole dance studio, that's also allowing me to just be in my body, focus on dancing and having fun with the girls. And then I can go and focus on my responsibilities as well. And also just like reminding yourself in the moment, it's like, it's not that deep. Like, I'm packing my suitcase, I'm finishing an assignment, there's gonna be another assignment, I'm like doing this job, there's gonna be another job. Like, I think if you're already questioning like if you're good enough, that already means that you're probably doing better than most. Like, a lot of people don't actually question, so the bar's not as high as you think it is. Any totally. Final thoughts? We've got 8 minutes left.
I just thought, like, in the intro, like, I just realized this book was written in 1994. And like it literally says, the turbulence of our times demands strong selves with a clear sense of identity, da da da. And then it is a dangerous moment in history not to know who we are or not to trust ourselves. And it's like 1994, and we're how many years later? And you could say the same thing right now, if anything more, I guess, right now.
Yeah.
So I find that.
I don't think he was prepared for the impacts of social media that would come after the 90s.
And fascism.
Yeah. You have anything else that you want to share? Like, message me, put it in the comments on the Patreon. If you have any suggestions for how to like better structure or like things that you want to talk about and focus on more, let me know.
I just wanted to clarify, Jessica, your question about like being on the other side. What did you mean?
Sort of now, maybe you're in a more grounded and you feel more safe in your body. Looking back, you can then see from a bird's eye view, like, oh, I was actually just feeling anxious and it wasn't life or death. And how do you slowly transition into that state? I guess that was what I was saying.
No, I just, because I was wondering, because when I heard you, I was like, wait, on the other side. No, just to like really understand the question, because I feel like the other side, I thought of it like on the other side of happiness, maybe you were referring to, but no.
On the other side of anxiety.
Yeah.
I totally relate to that as well, because I remember when I was younger and people would be like, relax. I'd be like, what do you mean relax? There is no relaxing. I have to be stressed all the time. Okay. If I'm not stressed, then I haven't done anything. And it's just a process, you know? Like, I think noticing and having being made aware that there is a way, an alternative way, is already something that you can work with, you know, because there were times when you didn't even know that that was possible, you know, maybe the environment you grew up in or whatever, it's like you're just in a constant state of stress without even realizing. So just being aware that like, okay, it's possible and one day I can get there, and how can I just be present and like add practices or experiment with different practices that will help me to just be okay and content. And I think my therapist had told me, she was like, you don't have to be in a constant state of ecstasy, you know, like it's just like, I am okay. Like, if you most of the time are like, I am okay, that's a great goal to have. That's like ideal. You have like a healthy baseline, and then your emotions will go up and down, you know, with different triggers, with different environmental factors or whatever. Like, that's the ideal sort of state to be in. There is no like mountain or destination to like, I'm healed and now everything's amazing. And I think it's natural for us to seek that. So just noticing that you're even seeking that and being like, it's okay. Like, I just need to be okay. Things will come up, things will come down. There's flop, there's slay. It's just my ability to respond that can improve and evolve with new information and new experiences. I think that's like a really powerful thing to remind you of. It's normal that you'll seek like a shortcut or that you'll long for the day when you have no problems, but just be compassionate and with yourself and be like, that's okay. Like, that's not going to happen. Let me just figure out how to be present. You know, you kind of like are always in this like state of negotiation and like redirecting your attention, and your ability to do that is like a important part of self-esteem, you know, living consciously, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah.
No, I get the question out, and I feel like I would also add, just question everything, because I feel like you need to, like, everything that you're told, just like question, like, who's this benefiting, and if it's not you, toss it out.
Yeah,
honestly, because yeah, people, everybody has their own agenda and they're trying to push it on you all the time, and just trust yourself and whatever your impulses are, like your intuition, like trust it. I know everybody says that all the time, and even in that book that we mentioned, The Women with the Wolves, but like, trust it. Like, you know, and your body knows, like, you always know. It's just like, we're literally conditioned to be, to not trust it. And
yeah, or just ask yourself, how can I get this to benefit me, you know, like,
exactly. Yeah.
And it's okay, sometimes you make mistakes. It's like, okay, I think this, but this person says this, let me entertain them and see, okay, I was actually right all along, next time I know better. You know, it doesn't have to be like fully black or white. Part of it is being hot and having fun, experimenting, learning, growing. Thank you so much, everyone, for joining. I'm so grateful. Let me know if you have any other questions and thoughts and feelings. Hopefully see you next week as well.
Yes.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.